we'll get started. For me, it's a special pleasure to introduce Rav Avia Tavori, because I had the pleasure, I've known him since he was probably 3 years old, because his father was my Rosh Yeshiva in Or Chaim, and it's really, you know, I guess I'm getting a lot older when I'm having already in the second generation. He's here on his own merits, but it's just really, I remember he would come to school a little bit. I don't think he was quite in nursery yet, and when I was in the beginning of high school. So it's really a pleasure. I've known, I guess, the family for many, many years, and I guess I've changed over the years. Ask your father what I was like as a high school student, and it's a pleasure to have you. I know you've been spent, you know, many years in Chinuch. You're now teaching at Eretz Hatzvi, at Yeshivat Eretz Hatzvi, on a full-time basis. I believe you spent a year in Atlanta.
In
London on Shavuot. Your sister was in Atlanta.
Yeah, Detroit.
Okay, close. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'll quit when I'm behind. But anyways, it's a pleasure to have him. He was in New York over Shabbos. He flew in very early this morning. We appreciate him. Without further ado, Rav Tavori Jr., if I can say so.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. I think I'll do without the microphone if that's okay. Yeah? I have here. Oh, you're recording it. Okay, so I will. Thank you. It's actually quite exciting to come back to Toronto. I've been here a few times since I was since the age of 7, but every time I come back, I have flashbacks of my childhood here, certain street names and places. Even though I think that the philosophy called Motis doesn't exist anymore. Motis? Yeah, that's what I remember. Okay. This week, B'ezrat Hashem, Wednesday, we'll be celebrating Yom Yerushalayim. Just two weeks ago, we celebrated Yom HaAtzmaut. And if we were to compare Yom HaAtzmaut to Yom Yerushalayim, we would notice that there is a big difference between them, especially the way they are celebrated in Israel. I don't know what happens here in Canada. I don't know what happens in America. But in Israel, Yom HaAtzmaut is a day where really you walk in the streets of Israel. I would say 90%, maybe 80% of Israelis celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut in different ways. No one goes to work. It's a holiday. It's a national holiday, and really, there's such a feeling in the air of excitement. There are parades, there are fireworks, there are special davenings, there are special events. You can smell the barbecues everywhere. It's really an amazing feeling of celebration. But when it comes to Yom Yerushalayim, the past few years, I think it is quite hard outside Yerushalayim to really feel a celebration of Yom Yerushalayim. I'm speaking even in the firm world in Eretz Yisrael, there's not so much feeling of Chag. Many people go to work. And besides some parades in Yerushalayim itself, and besides, I guess, some Hallel being said in Shul throughout the country, there is not the same feeling of celebration of Yom Yerushalayim. I think there's a reason for it. I don't think there's a rational reason for it, but I would like to try to suggest at some point why this is and why this is happening. I will start with a very famous question of the Rambam in Rosh Nevuchim. The Rambam points out that the name Yerushalayim does not appear anywhere in the entire Chumash. Now the Rambam is troubled by this. Why is this? It's as if Hashem wants to hide Yerushalayim from us. And in order to tell us that there is such a place, he names it Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Every so often, it is mentioned that there will be a place. There shall be a place where God will choose. And it will be the chosen place. But the emphasis is on Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Only Hashem himself will choose his place. And why is this? Why is it so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides the place of the Mikdash, the temple. He hides the city of Shechinah. And only later on, throughout the Tanakh, we learn where this place is. I want to add another question to the Rambam's question. Surely there are other places mentioned in the Chumash where we consider it to be a good place where Beit HaMikdash should be built. If we had to decide towards the end of the Chumash, where would this special place be? Where is the city which God is going to dwell upon? Which city will this be? Well, we have a nice choice. Can anyone suggest maybe what cities became special in the Chumash that we can think about? Maybe that's what God's talking about. Hebron is a good example. The Avot are buried there. It became a special place. Any other place? Any other cities? Yes? Beersheba. Okay, maybe Beersheba. We have Korbanot being sacrificed there. Okay, anywhere else? Beit El and Shechem, correct? Those are classic cities to be considered in the choice of the capital of Israel, the capital of the Shechinah. That's where the Avot lived. That's where they sacrificed their Korbanot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is where many of our forefathers are buried. So one would expect those cities to become the city. HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Why Yerushalayim? What is special about Yerushalayim that at the end God chooses that place from all other cities? The Rambam gives an answer. I'm going to skip the introduction because it seems that the Rambam understood something that I find it very hard to understand. The Rambam understood that somehow throughout the Chumash our forefathers did have a tradition, had a masoret, that Yerushalayim will be HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, even though I'm going to do as much as I can to prove to you that that is not correct. It seems that no one knew that HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem will be Yerushalayim. And we'll prove that in a few moments. But firstly, let's read the Rambam's answers. What is it that Yerushalayim is not mentioned in the Chumash? He brings down the three practical reasons. And when we read the answers, please notice that somehow it seems that some of these answers could have been written today, yesterday. Firstly, he says, if the nations had learned that this place was to be the center of the highest religious truth, they would occupy it or fight about it. Right? How true does that seem today in our world? Says the Rambam, as if he's saying, and I will try not to be so political, but just to try to use the Rambam's idea in our days today. What the Rambam is basically saying is that if the nations of the world would know when we were in the Midbar, in the desert, on our way to Israel, if they would know that Yerushalayim is the chosen place, that the Temple Mount is going to be the Temple Mount, when the Jews would have arrived into Eretz Yisrael, there would have been a big mosque on the mountain called that we know as Har HaBayit. So Hashem wanted to hide that from the world, not from necessarily from Am Yisrael. The Rambam gives a second answer, which is very similar. The second answer is, I'm not sure what the difference exactly is, but it's the same idea. The nations of the world, if they would have known where Yerushalayim is, they would have destroyed the city of the Temple Mount. Again, focusing on the nations of the world. But the third answer, which I think is very important and very relevant throughout Jewish history, is that every one of the 12 tribes would desire to have this place in its borders and under its control. If the tribes of Israel would have known at the time that Eretz Yisrael, which would be divided amongst them, and everyone should get their portion that they deserve, if they would have known that Yerushalayim was a chosen city, there would have been a fierce battle between them, who would be the one to receive Yerushalayim in their nachala and their portion. Why is that so important that it shouldn't happen? Because we know Yerushalayim is a city that brings people together. Yerushalayim, the name of Yerushalayim, the city of peace, and Chas V'Shalom, that Yerushalayim should be based upon brothers fighting, quarreling amongst themselves. And therefore, Hashem made sure that no one knew where Yerushalayim was. These are very practical reasons, very good reasons. I'm going to try to suggest another reason, which I think is a very important one in understanding the whole relationship that Am Yisrael has with Yerushalayim. But before we do that, let us look in the sources mentioned in the Tanakh that either hint to Yerushalayim or mention Yerushalayim explicitly. Let us begin with the pasuk in Bereishit, Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem Hotzilechem V'Yayin V'Uchen Elyon. We have a king called Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek, it seems that he was a good king, with a name like that. We have other people in Tanakh that have names that seem to hint that they're not such good people, like Naval, or anyone other, Nimrod maybe. But here we have a king who's called Malki Tzedek. That's a good hint that this man is a man of justice, a man of peace. And he's the king of a place called Shalem. Is this the Yerushalayim? It could very well be. It could very well be that it's not. But we know that Shalem and Yerushalayim come from the same word. Maybe this is a hint that Avraham, who met Malki Tzedek in the battles of Avraham with Lot, maybe at this point it's the first time that one of our forefathers comes to the Yerushalayim. And I'm not going into this too deep because some people really have a whole mahalachim, they have all these discussions of how Shalem is Yerushalayim and why Malki Tzedek and why Avraham. I'm not going into that right now because it's all Drush. But I would like to mention that the second place that's mentioned in the Chumash that might hint to us that's referring to Yerushalayim is, of course, Har HaMoriah. Har HaMoriah, we know it today as Har HaBayit. We today connect it. In the Chumash, there's no connection to Yerushalayim. In Divrei HaYamim, towards the end of the Tanakh, in Divrei HaYamim, we are told that Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beit HaMikdash on Har HaMoriah. But that is only written when Shlomo HaMelech builds it. Shlomo HaMelech makes that connection between Har HaMoriah and Har HaBayit. In the Chumash, when we read the story about the Akedah, there is no hint that is referring to Har HaBayit. I will try to prove in a few moments that Chazal connected Har HaBayit to Har HaMoriah based upon a certain story that occurs in Tanakh, and there's no doubt in my mind that Chazal put Har HaMoriah and Har HaBayit together because of the following story that we're about to mention. By the way, Avram calls Har HaMoriah what? Asher Ya'amer. He calls it Behar Hashem Ye'ira'eh. It shall be seen. Oh, which is a good hint that one day it shall be seen, Hashem shall be seen. And if you take the verb Ye'ira'eh, Lirot, to see, and you connect it to Shalem, which you just mentioned a few moments ago, then you will get Yerushalayim. But, as I mentioned before, as the Rambam mentioned, Yerushalayim as a city is not mentioned in Tanakh, in Chumash. Where is it mentioned? In Sefer Yehoshua. At the end of Sefer Yehoshua, which is on in front of you, we have a list of 31 cities which Yehoshua and the people of Israel conquer as they enter the land of Israel. In that list, if I'm not mistaken, Yerushalayim is mentioned as just another city of many other cities that the Jews have conquered. We don't know anything special about the battles that took place there, unlike cities like Yericho, Ha'ai, other cities that we have in great detail. The explanation is exactly what went on there. Yerushalayim is found just in a random list of places that the Jews conquered. Let's now see, in the bottom of your source sheet, you will see that Sefer Shoftim begins with a very strange story. We just finished moments ago Sefer Yehoshua, in which we know that Bnei Yisrael, Am Yisrael, ended 7 years of war, 14 years of Nachala, and it seems that peace is amongst us. That's it. We did our duty, we did our wars, now it's time to farm the land. But yet, strangely enough, Sefer Shoftim begins with new wars. What's going on here? Bnei Yisrael have a lottery to decide who will fight the next battle. And it says in Pasuk Bet, Ve'omer Hashem Yehuda Yale, He nimtzat et ha'aretz b'yado. Shevet Yehuda receives the job to go and fight the next battle. What battle? We just finished the battle. There's peace. Ve'omer Yehuda l'Shimon achiv, Aleiti begorali. So Shimon helps Yehuda, and he says, I will help you. It's as if nothing happened, as if we're going back to the days where we have to conquer Israel again. Now please notice, The first battle mentioned here is against a king called Adoni-Bezek. Adoni-Bezek is the king of Jerusalem, as it says at the end of the this paragraph. It said that they bring his body, Ve'viyu Yerushalayim Ve'yamut Sham. It is the battle of Yerushalayim. As it says in Pasuk Chet on the next page, Ve'ilachamu b'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim Ve'akadu otah Ve'yakul lefichav. Maybe Adoni Bezek wasn't the king of Yerushalayim, but the battle took place by Yerushalayim, and part of this battle was also the battle for Yerushalayim. What battle of Yerushalayim? We just conquered it a few Pesukim ago. Why do we have to conquer Yerushalayim again? And let's see something very interesting. Pasuk Tet. V'achar yardu bnei Yehuda lilachem b'Kana'ani. They continue fighting. What happens to Yerushalayim? It says in Pasuk Kaf Aleph. V'tayivusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo horishu bnei Binyamin. So I'm now really confused. It says that Yerushalayim was not inhabited by the Shevet of Binyamin. But wait a second, it was Shevet Yehuda who conquered Yerushalayim. Why are we accusing Bnei Binyamin of not settling in Yerushalayim? And what is the Pasuk telling us? It's telling us that even after the second battle for Yerushalayim, who was sitting there in Yerushalayim? Who? The Yevusi. Now that proves, I think, without any doubt, that no one knew at the time that Yerushalayim would be HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Can you imagine fighting for Yerushalayim twice and leaving it open for the Yevusis to live there? If anyone had any doubt that Yerushalayim would be the HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, no one would have left Yerushalayim to be open like that. But let's answer the first question. Why is it that Bnei Yisrael have to reconquer Yerushalayim in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim? The answer is very simple. And the Torah, reading the Chumash, and throughout the Sefer Yoshua, hint to us the sin of Bnei Yisrael as they entered the land of Israel. It is true that they fought for the land, and they conquered many cities. But the sin was that they didn't settle the land the way they were supposed to be. This idea of not settling the land, and people preferring to remain in their first houses at which they came to live in Israel is a common thing throughout the Chumash, throughout the Tanakh. You can go back to Migdal Bavel and prove it. But the idea was that Jews entered the land. They probably built some camps. And at some point, those camps became their homes. And the army went forward, conquered the cities. And you know how it is. We already registered our kids into school. We already have jobs here. Who wants to go and become a mitnachel, a settler right now, and settle in new cities around Israel? We're comfortable here. Now, what happens in that case? It's very simple. That slowly, even though those cities were conquered a few moments ago, no one's living there. So slowly, they'll be full. They'll be filled up again with the non-Jewish population, which surrendered just moments ago. And that is the sin of Bnei Yisrael throughout, at the end of Sefer Yoshua, in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. And as we can see, the second conquering didn't even help. The second attempt to conquer the city maybe succeeded in conquering the city, but Yerushalayim did not become a Jewish city at the time, but rather a Yevusi city. I don't have much time to explain a certain idea which I would like to dwell upon. I'll just mention very, very briefly that the Rambam in Petah Bechira, in Chot Petah Bechira, mentions the difference between the Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shniyah of Eretz Yisrael. He explains that there were two times in Jewish history where the Jewish people made the land Kadosh. Whatever that means right now, for our purposes, we'll just explain that for halachic reasons, for obligations on a Doraita level, on a Torah level, biblical level of Shemitah, Tumot Ma'asrot, the land has to be Kadosh. And the land can only become Kadosh when the Jews enter the land and make it Kadosh. Says the Rambam that the Kedushah of the days of Yehoshua was in effect till the times of the Churban, time of the destruction, at which it left the land. The land wasn't Kadosh. And the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, when we returned from the Galut, from Galut Bavel, the Kedushah returned back to Israel, and this time it returned forever. Meaning the Kedushah still remains today in Eretz Yisrael from the days of Ezra. And the Rambam asks, why is it that the Kedusha of Ezra wasn't as strong as the Kedusha of... I'm sorry, why the Kedusha of Yehoshua, why wasn't it as strong as the Kedusha of Ezra? And he answered a very interesting answer based upon what we just said now. He says, Kedusha Rishona came by kibush, by the force of war, by conquering the land. That may be a very forceful way of making the land kadosh. But it doesn't make the people connected to the land. A soldier doesn't really fight for the land in a way that he feels connected to the land. It's his job, it's his mission. But Kedusha Shnia was doing by farming the land, by settling the land. When we came back in the days of Ezra, we returned to our country, to our homeland, and we rebuilt the settlements, the villages, the towns, all over Eretz Yisrael. And that, says the Rambam, that kind of Kedusha is a much deeper Kedusha, which remains forever. Let us go back to what we just said now, which I explained, proves to us that the times of Yehoshua, the times of Shoftim, the Jews did not know that Yerushalayim was the chosen city. There are other, by the way, referrals to Yerushalayim in the next chapters of Shoftim. I'll just mention one or two of them. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, those who are familiar with the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, we know the terrible story that occurs, and the man walking towards up north has to go through Yerushalayim, and it says that he cannot go into Yerushalayim because the Yebusis are sitting in Yerushalayim. Again, proof that towards the end of Sefer Shoftim, Yerushalayim is still not in the hands of the Jews, but rather of the Yebusim. I want to just mention one last thing. I mentioned before that Yerushalayim was settled by the Yebusis, and Shevet Yehuda conquered it from them, but Bnei Binyamin did not settle it. Why is that? I didn't answer that question. I'll answer it right now. It is because, as we learn from the end of Sefer Yehoshua, the city of Yerushalayim was divided between Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. The border between both Nachalot goes in the middle of Yerushalayim, and we'll soon see that that's a very important factor in David deciding for Yerushalayim to be his capital city. Which means that there were probably two parts of the city. There was a city of Yehuda, Binyamin, and the Tanakh is telling us not only did Shevet Yehuda not resell the city, Shevet Binyamin did not sell their part either. It could be that Shevet Yehuda did sell part of it, as we can see later on, a very important pasuk, which people always seem to forget in the context of Yerushalayim. I'll mention it now, I'll get back to it later. It says that on the way, after David HaMelech slays Goliath, he takes his head, it's a bit not so politically correct in today's world, but he takes his head with him to where? To Yerushalayim. Why is he taking it to Yerushalayim? He's a kid who slays Goliath in the valley of, anyone? Emek Ha'ilah, not far from my house, down the road, 10 minutes away. By the way, if you ever go there, there's a little river in Emek Ha'ilah, which is the only river in the whole area, which means that is the place where David chose picked up his rock to kill Goliath. It's the Chalukei Evan. It says that he took rocks from the riverbend, and that's got to be the only place in that area. So it's pretty cool. You just drive over that every time you go to Tel Aviv from Gush Etzion. You drive over that little river. Pretty historical. Why does he choose to bring the head of Goliath, which obviously is a trophy, some kind of trophy that he wishes to show people, to Yerushalayim, out of all cities, especially if Yerushalayim at the time is not really a city in the hands of anyone Jewish? Maybe we'll get back to that soon. The next time we meet Yerushalayim really as a special place is in the story of David HaMelech, as it says in Shmuel Bet, on the next page. Ben Shloshim Shana David B'molcho, 40 שנה מלך, בחברו מלך על יהודה 7 שנים ו6 חודשים, ובירושלים מלך 33 שנה על כל ישראל ויהודה. דוד המלך is king of Hebron. And like we said before, Hebron makes sense. Why would you want Hebron to be your capital city? Hebron has a good past. It has a very Jewish past to it. And suddenly David HaMelech decides to take Yerushalayim. He has to fight for it because, as it says here, the Yivusi are sitting in Yerushalayim. And of course the question is, why does David HaMelech need to change his capital from Hebron to Yerushalayim? I think the answer is quite simple. The answer is, David HaMelech until now was in a very, very difficult position. On one hand, he was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the king of Israel, but on the other hand, he has a rival, he has Shaul HaMelech, David HaMelech is very careful not to kill Shaul HaMelech, not to get to his throne by the means of violence. He waits patiently till Shaul dies, and now it's time for David HaMelech to be king. But David HaMelech has to be very careful, because until now, he was a king of Yehuda. And obviously the people of Yisrael are suspicious. What kind of king is coming here? Oh, this king, he has a favorite people. His favorite people are Shevet Yehuda. This king, we better watch him. David HaMelech has to make a very clear statement. I am from now the king of all Am Yisrael. I'm sure, every time the prime minister or... In this country, there's a prime minister, right? Right, just like we have one. But in our country, it's every year or two, we get a new one. Our prime minister always likes to get up after elections and declare that even though he was voted like 51% out of 49 and were against him, he always likes to say, I am everyone's prime minister, right? And that's I was chosen maybe from the right, maybe from the left, but I am now everyone's leader. And David HaMelech has to make the same statement, and therefore he has to move his capital. A, he has to get out of Hebron, because Hebron is always associated with Yehuda. And now he has to make a statement that his capital will be a place which does not belong necessarily to Shevet Yehuda, in this case, Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin. It's very clear that he has to make that statement in order for him to be accepted by the whole entire Jewish people. Going back to the story of Goliath, maybe that is what David HaMelech is thinking already as a kid. Okay, maybe the ambitions of becoming a king are already settling in his mind as a kid fighting Goliath, and he realizes then that the trophy of Goliath cannot be presented in Hebron, because if it be presented in Hebron, it's as if saying this belongs to Shevet Yehuda. Rather, he's saying the victory that I just won belongs to the entire Jewish people. Let the whole entire Jewish people look at me as their representative, as their leader. So, quite a politician, if that's really true at quite a young age. He comes to the city of David, as we know it today, of Yerushalayim of today, and he conquers Yerushalayim. I'm not going to go into the whole story of the conquering. We don't have time to go into the whole story. I'm sure those of you who have been to Ir David, the city of David in Yerushalayim, right beneath Har HaBayit, and we're taking a tour around there, can learn this chapter in Tanakh in a way that you can't learn it any other way. This is one of the most amazing cases in archaeological findings, that Pshat of Tanakh have been changed the past 30 years, three times backwards and forwards, based upon new findings. The Pshat here, what does it mean? Mamash, the words do not make any sense to you actually go and see a certain shaft, a certain pier that exists in the city of David, and which probably explains to us how Yoav, the Sar Tzva of David, climbed through it, opened up the gates of Yerushalayim, and let David and his people inside. I'm not going to go into this because it's not really our topic right now, but it's quite a fascinating story, how David HaMelech conquers Yerushalayim. So we said it's for practical reasons David conquers Yerushalayim, and he makes it his Ir Malchut. It becomes the city of Melucha. Of course, what's missing is Ir HaMikdash. Yerushalayim to us today is a city both of Melucha and a city of Mikdash. As we say in Lecha Dodi, Mikdash Melech, Ir Melucha. That is what's special about Yerushalayim. And David HaMelech senses that, and he wishes to make Yerushalayim into the city of the Mikdash. And he asks Kadosh Baruch Hu to build a temple in Yerushalayim. And Hashem says, no. You will not build it. Who will build it? Shlomo HaMelech. Where will this temple be built? We don't know. We still don't know that Yerushalayim will become Ir HaMikdash. Well, I'm not sure that David HaMelech also intended it to be Ir HaMikdash. He asked Hashem to build the Mikdash. Where? I'm not so sure. And Hashem says, no, it won't be you. You made it Ir Malchut. I'll decide where the Ir Mikdash will be. And again, we ask the question, why is that? Why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to choose the Ir Mikdash? Let us now see the story how Yerushalayim becomes Ir Mikdash. The story in front of you in Divrei Yamim, Aleph Kaf Aleph, is mentioned in Shmuel and Divrei Yamim, but there's something special about the story of Divrei Yamim, which is needed for our discussion right now. It says in Divrei Yamim, Perek Aleph, and I actually forgot to put a very important pasuk in here. Finding a pasukim in art school, Tanakh, takes twice the time. Divrei Yamim. The parak begins It says like this in Pasuk Aleph, Perkaf Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Vayamod Satan al Yisrael. Vayaset et David not Israel. The story is about how David HaMelech does a census, he counts the people of Israel, and the Tanakh tells something very strange, that Satan convinced David to do this. Satan is not mentioned many times in Tanakh, he's more mentioned in Chazal. It's a very strange idea that Satan comes into the picture and gets involved. Who is Satan and what is he doing here? I'm not so sure, but if you recall, Chazal put Satan in another very famous story in Chumash. Chazal connects Satan to the story of Eov. Okay, let's forget about Eov right now. Eov, maybe lo hayav lo nivra. Let's talk about a real story that occurs in Tanakh, that Satan is a very important... When we were in kindergarten, we all thought that that's the pshat of the Chumash. Vayi achar hadvarim ha'ele ve'alohim nisa et Avraham. When we were kids in kindergarten, we always thought, Vayi achar hadvarim ha'ele, what's achar hadvarim ha'ele, said Rashi, after Satan came to Kadosh Baruch Hu and said to him, who is this Avram that you like so much? You know, until now he was with you because he wanted a son. But from now on, you know, test him out. See what's going to happen if you ask him to give you his son. So maybe the same Satan mentioned here is this, the Satan of Chazal, the story of Avraham, and soon we'll see the connection between both stories. David HaMelech sins, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes him and the entire Jewish people. He kills many people, but he also wishes to destroy Yerushalayim. As it says in front of you, Vayishlach Elohim Malach l'Yerushalayim l'ashchita. Oh, Malach. Let's go back to the Akedah. We also have a Malach at the Akedah. The Malach standing over Avraham on Har Abayit, on Har Moriah, excuse me. Uche Hashchit Ra'a Hashem Vayinachem Al Ra'a. Suddenly Hashem decides, like in the Akedah, he decides not to go forward with destruction of Yitzchak, not go through the destruction of Yerushalayim. Vayomer LaMalach HaMashchit Rav Ata Heref Yadecha. He tells the Malach to stop. Umalach Hashem Omed in Goren Ornan HaYivusi. There's a mountain over Yerushalayim where there's a threshold, and there's a Yivusi. I don't know what you call Yivusi in English, maybe a Jebusite. Maybe a Jebusite sounds like a guy from Star Wars. Anyway, this Jebusite is standing there, and he's working in his field. Which, by the way, again proves, I think without any doubt, that no one knew that Har Abayit would become Har Abayit. David HaMelech realized, is king of Yerushalayim, and yet on this mountaintop, they're just working in the fields. I mean, if they had any indication that would become one day Har Hashem, do you think they would allow people to work there in the fields? I find that hard to imagine. So Yerushalayim is still a riddle. It's still hidden from us. And the Malach is standing over this mountain. He has a sword in his hand that goes back to the Akedah, where Avram also has a dagger, some kind of instrument to kill Yitzhak. I'm going to skip a little bit. Pasuk Yudchet, Umalach Hashem Amar El Gad, Leimor Le David, Keale David Leakim Mizbeach LaHashem Begoren Ornan HaYivusi. David HaMelech is told, if you, David, go and sacrifice a korban on this Mizbeach, the plague will end. Come on, this is the Akedah story, right? It's exactly the same story. We have all the cherev, we have the malach, we have the satan, and we have the answer. The answer is, instead of sacrificing Yerushalayim, instead of sacrificing Yitzchak, you have to sacrifice a korban. And this is the yesod, this is the foundation of the Mikdash. The Mizbeach built by David, as we'll soon see, on Har Abayit will be the Mizbeach later on that Shlomo HaMelech will build on Har Abayit, which will be sacrificing, we will be sacrificing our Korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see that Chazal probably connected Har Moriah to Har Abayit based upon this story. They saw the connection. Har Abayit is Har Moriah. Avram and the story of the Yerushalayim are similar. What does David do at this point? He decides, rather than to conquer Jerusalem, he decides to purchase Jerusalem. Which is, by the way, probably interesting in those days, that a king, instead of doing what we'd expect him to do, and just that is just throwing him out of the field and building his mizbeach, insists on negotiating with Ornan. I'm a bit limited with time. I'll just go through the pasukim really quickly, because one pasuk here stands out very importantly. It says in pasuk Kaf Bet, "Vayomer David el Ornan, tna li mekom agoren ve'evnu b'mizbeach la'Hashem." Bekesef malei tneuli. Rashi points out there's only one other place in Tari Chumash that kesef malei appears. Where is that? Rather Machpelah, and Chazal already connect both stories, and it's actually quite freaky how the story of buying a Rather Machpelah is exactly the same story here. In both cases, we have one of our forefathers, Avram, or in this case David, who is trying to purchase land in Eretz Yisrael. In both cases, the non-Jew. His answer to the king or to Avram is, "Come on, Avram, David, we're friends. You don't have to start negotiating with me. Take it. It's a present. Do with it whatever you want." And again, David HaMelech emphasizes, right? And it's so interesting because since when do Jews demand to pay a full price for anything? He says, "No, bekesef malei." Look at pasuk of Dalet. David, "No, ki kano kne bekesef malei. I don't want your presence. I don't want your goodwill. I want to purchase Eretz Yisrael. I want to purchase Har HaBayit bekesef malei." And Chazal, in a very famous midrash, pick up on this and say to us that there are three places in the Eretz Yisrael that the goyim will not be able to argue who it belongs to. There are three cities in Chumash that it says explicitly that they were bought by, not in Chumash, but in Tanakh, that it says explicitly that they were bought by Am Yisrael. It's Shechem, Hebron, and Yerushalayim. Shechem is bought by Yaakov, Vayiken, it says, he bought it, he purchased it. And Avram and David, it says that he purchased it. It says the Midrash, the Goyim can come around and say, "Tel Aviv doesn't belong to you." They can say, "Afula, Haifa belongs to us." But when it comes to Yerushalayim, Hebron, and Shechem, we have proof of purchase. It's a very strange midrash, by the way. A, because those three places today are not in Jewish hands, right? There are three mosques on those exact three places. And it doesn't really work, does it? I mean, can you imagine Alan Dershowitz getting in some kind of discussion, and when they say to him, what's Hebron and Shechem and Yerushalayim to Jews? And he says, "Wait, I have a great proof. Here, see? Look what it says." In a similar way, the first Rashi in Chumash tells us that Bereshit, the Torah starts with Bereshit, because if the goyim ever come to us and tell us that we stole their land, we'll always be able to pull out the chumash and say, "Hey, what are you talking about? Bereshit bara Elokim tashmayim v'taaretz. God created the world, so it belongs to us." What did Rashi mean? And what does the Midrash mean? So just on a side remark, I'll say that Rav Charlap, a very famous student of Rav Kook, with Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Rav in the 60s, I think in the 50s and 60s, he made a very interesting comment. He says, the Midrash never meant that these psukim should be used for proof of purchase towards the goyim, but rather towards ourselves. He's basically saying, if we believe in the stories of Tanakh, if we really believe that Eretz Yisrael belongs to us, that we have the right, the moral, ethical right to possess Eretz Yisrael, then we can always argue something else. But we'll argue that's another thing. But first of all, we have to begin with the point that we really believe in the right that we have to Eretz Yisrael. And he points out that the pasuk that Rashi quotes is Koach Ma'asav Higid Le'amo. The pasuk refers to Am Yisrael, to Amo, not rather to the Goyim. But anyway, let's go on. So Avram and David, they both purchased land in Eretz Yisrael, and they pay the full price. And at that point, we understand Eish comes down from the Shemaim, just like in David Shlomo HaMelech. And now David HaMelech knows that this is a place where the temple shall be built, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Again, let's go back to the first question. Why only now do we know? And why in this strange way do we get to know that Yerushalayim will become HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem? I believe the answer is very simple and very important. I believe that Yerushalayim symbolizes so much to us. It symbolizes redemption. It symbolizes the day in which Hashem will dwell upon amongst us. And the message is very simple. We have to be ready to build a Beit HaMikdash. We have to want to build a Beit HaMikdash. We have to daven for it. We have to do whatever we can for the Beit HaMikdash to be built. But there are some things that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us that it's in His hands. I think that we have had many problems in our past because a lot of times we think that we know better than Kadosh Baruch Hu how, when, and where the Ge'ula will happen. We have plans when it's good for us, how it's good for us, when the Beit HaMikdash will be built, when Mashiach will come. We know sometimes better as if when it's good. And the message is very clear. HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Hashem will choose which city, which place. You have to be ready. You have to be ready at a moment's notice to go to Yerushalayim or any place that Hashem decides that it will be. And I will tell you at that moment what will happen. But there are some things that are not in the hands of human beings. Hashrat Hashchina, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. When we are ready for it, it will come down. And in some very strange way, this is, seems to be exactly what happened on Yom Yerushalayim in the year 67. I am told by my parents and by people that are a bit older than me, and if you read the historical books, you will see that no one knew. At 67, the day before the war broke out, no one even thought of Yerushalayim. There was no plan to enter the Yerushalayim. The parachuters that were given the task to enter Yerushalayim, the first day of war, were actually told that they were going to down to Sinai. They were very excited because they were told that the first time since 56, they'll be parachuting in war. That's the last time that Israel ever parachuted in war was 1956. And they were all excited about it. They'll get the opportunity to use their training to parachute to Sinai. And suddenly, last minute, they were all upset to hear that they were being transferred to Yerushalayim. No one knew what was going on. The Israeli government begged King Hussein of Jordan, do not get involved. We have two fronts that we are fighting. Who can fight three fronts? Please don't get involved. We won't touch Beit Lechem, Hebron, Yerushalayim. Just stay out and leave us alone. And Baruch Hashem, you can say, Hashem ichbid et Levi Paro, I don't know. King Hussein got involved. And out of nowhere, suddenly, no one was prepared. Yerushalayim fell into our hands. As if again, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. You think you know when and where? No. I'm going to decide how, when, and where Yerushalayim will be yours. We are still very far from Yerushalayim being Yiram Mikdash. It's Yiram Malchut, and sometimes even barely that. Even though, Baruch Hashem, we do have a Malchut in Israel. We do have a Malchut in Yerushalayim. We can say Hallel for that. On Yom Atzmut and Yom Yerushalayim. And thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having a Yiram Malchut. We are a bit far from it becoming a Yiram Mikdash. But B'ezrat Hashem, we should daven and do as best as we can for it to become Yiram Mikdash. And hopefully, where and when, Hashem will decide. Thank you.